You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What is up, Van Flippers? Thanks for checking out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast, the number one hardcore and metal podcast on all of the internet. I am your host, Lurk, and this week what I'm interested in is what records did you pick up for Record Store Day this past weekend? Go ahead and tweet me a picture of it and we'll talk shop. Let's go ahead and jump into the top five stories on lambgoat.com this past week. Coming in at number five, we have California Death Fest 2020 lineup finalized. The festival is taking place in Los Angeles, California next year, January 28th through the 30th. For the full breakdown of the bands and schedule, head over to the website. Number 4, the Black Dahlia Murder announced Up From The Sewer Tour 2001. The tour will run from September to October, featuring support from After The Burial, Carniflex, Rivers of Nil, and Undeath. Number 3, the Acacia Strain announced tour with Kublai Khan, Harm's Way, and more. The Acacia Strain have announced a fall U.S. tour, during which the group will perform two nights in each city, one to play It Comes In Waves in its entirety along with select cuts from Slow Decay, and the other to perform Wormwood in full. Support on select dates will be provided by Harm's Way and Kublai Khan, along with Orthodox and Dying Wish on all other dates. Number 2, and a personal favorite of mine this week, Glassjaw announces U.S. tour in honor of first two albums. The band has revealed plans to hit the road in early 2020 to celebrate the 20th anniversaries of their first two albums, Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Silence, which came out in 2000, and Worship and Tribute, which came out in 2002. In some cities, they will play two nights featuring an album a night, while in other cities, they'll play one night featuring both albums. And it should come as no surprise that I already have my ticket for the Atlanta date, so tweet me if you're also going to that show and let's link up. And the number one story on Lambgoat this week was Lorna Shore announced vocalist and premiere new track. The New Jersey deathcore unit have formally announced the addition of vocalist Will Ramos to the band. You may know Will from his former band, Awaken Providence. This news probably doesn't come to a great shock of the fan base anyway, as Ramos has toured with them last year. And along with the announcement of Will, the band also shared a new single, To the Hellfire, which will be featured on their new EP, And I Return to Nothingness, on August 13th. Make sure you head over to lambgoat.com and watch the video for this single because the last minute breakdown is insane. But you can also check lambgoat.com for all the dates for the tours that we announced earlier in the segment as well. And now for the albums dropping this week, the week of June 18th, 2021. This week we have releases from Illustrium, Bosque, Fear Factory, The Day of the Beast, Hacktivist, Crobot, Death Perception, Heavy Temple, Halloween, and Tiger Cub. And our guest this week is James from Holics. I can hear you now asking yourself, what is Holics? Holics is like some musical promotion software / platform. Any of the advanced albums that we get usually through Holics or some other platform similar to Holics. So James will kind of explain all of what they do and how they help artists and such like that. We don't only talk about Holics the entire time. James and I also talk about the changes in the industry as well as the music scene in general. He also gives some insight on how bands should market themselves and further their career. Don't forget to follow Lambgoat on social media. Give us a like on Facebook, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Lambgoat. Head over to Lambgoat's YouTube page, and you can find all of these podcasts in video format and our other Lambgoat content. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and the alert bell so you're always notified when new content is uploaded. Whether you are a returning listener or this is your first time checking out the show, if you dig the content we're doing here, please take the time to go ahead and follow or subscribe to us. If you can give us a like or a rating, that would be extra helpful in the podcast algorithm. It helps so much. You have no idea. So thanks for taking the time out to do so. And if you want to follow me, Lurk, the host of the show, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lurk City. That's LURKCITY. And with that being said, let's go ahead and roll on into the episode.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is good stuff. Oh no. Oh, no, no,
no. Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to this episode of the Lambgoat Van Flip Podcast, which I'm sure you've already heard in the intro, but I can't stop myself from saying it a million times, and I don't know how to start the episodes off, so, you know, whatever. However, this week I am joined by James Shotwell, who is you work at Holics, which we will get into all of that. So, James, welcome to the show, brother.
Hi, thanks for having me. Long time listener, first time guest.
Well, I appreciate you listening. Let me just turn you down a little bit because now it's really banging. I appreciate you checking out the podcast. And, you know, we've interacted on Twitter for the last year or two. So it's finally good to – I know you've been wanting to get on, and I'm glad we've had a chance to finally get you on. Now, I'm not super familiar with Holics. I mean, I do use it because I get albums advanced to me via this platform. So I get to, you know, stream albums. And sometimes, depending on when they are in the schedule of of releasing, I can download them and, you know, preview them, and we review them at the website, blah, 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 blah. But I'm sure you're going to get into exactly what Holics is and what you do at Holics. So by all means, James, take the floor, man.
All right. Well, my very quick elevator pitch is that Holics is the service used by record labels and publicists and independent artists from all over the world to share new and unreleased music with influencers. Now, that can mean podcast hosts such as yourself, or journalists for Rolling Stone, for your local newspaper, radio shows all over the world, and pretty much anyone in between. You know, people use our service to handle licensing, you know, pitching the NFL, pitching WWE. I've seen certain artists use Holics to, you know, work on their albums. You know, Slipknot, for example, a very famous example for us, is they use our service to record their albums. So the members of Slipknot live all over the country. They can't always get together to record. So when they're building a new album, they'll actually have a Holics account where they're uploading, you know, the drum tracks or a riff or a vocal idea, and they share it with one another so that they know that it's secure and that it cannot easily be accessed by any, you know, average fan or anything like that. You know, we pride ourselves on our security. We've been in business since 2009. We just celebrated over a decade, obviously. And my job there is kind of complicated. I am the director of customer engagement and marketing for the company. So anything public facing, I handle. I am also in charge of, you know, managing all of our client relationships. So we have about 835 clients from all over the world. And this includes everyone from, you know, major labels like BMG to Metal Blade and Prosthetic Records, Hopeless Records. And then a bunch of, you know, independent artists. You know, we just had one sign up today called No Oceans from Sweden. They're super cool. And my job is just to make them feel welcome, answer any questions. I travel when we're able to travel. I go to like New York and LA. I take meetings. I do training sessions. And then the marketing angle of that is that we have a lot of forward-facing material. So we have our blog, Holics Daily, which includes the music industry job board, where we post free job listings for the music industry, super useful resource. I write all the content on our blog. We post 3 to 5 times every single week. We have a YouTube channel called Music Biz, and we have 2 podcasts, Inside Music, which is an interview show that's been going on for about 230 episodes now.
Nice.
And much more important to me anyways, and far more special, is our limited series High Notes, which is a show about addiction and recovery in the music business. We are about to release season 4 here in a few weeks. It'll be our 4th season in a year. But so we record anywhere from 3 to 8 episodes at a time, and we edit them, make them all nice and polished. It's not a typical interview podcast. It has a narrative structure to it. And then we drop them all at once, Netflix style, every couple of months. So our 4th season is coming up here at the end of June.
Nice. And it's odd that you mentioned that, because obviously today, this isn't airing obviously today or tomorrow, or this week rather. It'll come out weeks later. But unfortunately, you know, I'm sure you pay attention to the news and everything like that. If not, visit Lamb Goat sometimes. Riley Gale's cause of death came out today, and that unfortunately was a fentanyl accidental overdose, because he was dealing with some kind of, you know, depression and issues, and, you know, things happen and stuff like that. You know, what's weird about that too is a lot of people were very upset that, you know, we posted about it, and I'm sure they're upset that not just that we posted about it, but that it's coming out. But whereas, no disrespect to the family and our condolences and everything like that to the Gale, you know, family and everything like that. It's not for like the clicks, as some people say. You know, it's good to know, you know, that even people that are idolized, because I'm sure Power Trip was a big band for a lot of people, and Riley was not, I don't want to say idolized, but he was looked up to by a lot of people in the fan base, you know. So it's good to know that he's human too, and he deals with the same issues that maybe you or I do. But it also is good to know the cause of death, because it's rough. That fentanyl stuff is bad news. And I, you know, if I could erase anything off the world, well, I don't want to say anything, but if I could erase a drug off the world, it would probably be that one. I don't really see a point for that. But it is tricky, you know, putting out that information and such like that. But I do think it's good because I think people can learn from those mistakes. And unfortunately, he just had to pay the highest price to get that point across, which is unfortunate. And, you know, he's very missed and he will be very missed. But it's just strange that you bring that up. And it's good that you guys do that, obviously, good that you have that kind of content out there, because I do feel like sometimes in the macho-ish scenes, such as like, you know, the hardcore metal and metalcore and all those things, sometimes it looks cool to look tough, right? But it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to, you know, ask for, you know, to talk to somebody or to tell your problems. It's okay. Everyone has problems, bro. Everyone, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we first started High Notes, we got a lot of slack from some people who thought of it as kind of like addict porn, where we're going to, like, you know, drag out these musicians and make them talk about, you know, being strung out in a gutter or something like that. But there's a respect to have that conversation. And more importantly, if I've learned anything in the last year of doing the show, it's that it's really important that we have these conversations and not like high level fentanyl is bad, don't do heroin, because clearly that isn't working as a messaging. So I think that it's important to kind of bring people into the experience through somebody that they respect. So, you know, this upcoming season, we have Phil from All That Remains on the show. I'm sure that that'll be one that people really enjoy. But we have a lot of big musicians that have big fan bases. And I think it's important to hear somebody that you respect or maybe even just listen to talk about these things openly. It kind of destigmatizes it, makes it more okay to talk about. And honestly, I think that they're way more interesting conversations than hearing somebody tell you how the new album is, you know, more mature than anything you've done before, which I've been doing for, you know, 13 years now as a journalist. So it's, I know both sides of the coin, but I think that I saw the hate that Lame Goat was getting today and anyone else talking about it. And I was like, people don't understand, like, the only way that you make a positive shift in this war, and it is a war that we're fighting against these pharmaceutical companies, is to be like, look what it does.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, it's one of those touchy ass subjects where people get very offended by or whatnot because they don't know the motives, or, you know, they all think that they're ulterior motives for like, oh, Lamb Goat, or I don't want to keep saying Lamb Goat, but like X media site is posting because it's the clicks and the ad revenue and all and the other stuff. Well, there's no way around that. That is obviously gonna get a lot of attention, but there's also a bigger point that really needs to be driven home, which is, you know, it's dangerous. You can do that shit one time and you're not around anymore. You know what I mean? So it's like, it opens up your eyes a little bit. And there, you know, and again, like you were saying, I'm sure, you know, when Corey Taylor, Slipknot, started talking about all of his past issues and stuff like that, you know, I'm sure he got to a bunch of people just because his band has such a huge fan base and he's had such a, you know, long and hard, upbringing, and he had a lot of, you know, quote unquote traumas that happened. So I'm sure he, you know, helped a lot of people with that. So I only hope that people actually get, you know, it clicks in their head, either from your podcast, from other podcasts, from, you know, news stories that break. It's not about the negative vibe and negative, you know, attention that it's getting. It's all about, you know, helping the scene out in some which way. Like, I never really thought that we would be sitting here discussing like drug overdoses in the scene, you know, and it just is like, it's becoming more prevalent as time goes on, whether it's like, you know, I just remember like people just would get drunk sometimes or maybe smoke a little weed. Yeah. And now it's like everyone's off the deep end sometimes, you know, it feels like.
Well, and sometimes you just don't know, right? Like we've done episodes of High Notes where I was like, we're going to talk about drinking today. And we're 5 minutes in and it's like, and then I was doing, you know, crack cocaine and you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's you don't go in expecting sometimes, but again, that's like that's the mystique of rock and roll, right? Like, they're partying, but it's always within reason. Or, you know, how could they be so lonely that they turn to this thing because they have this audience? But, you know, they're just people, just broken people like you and I.
Yeah,
and not that you're broken, but, you know,
I probably am very broken to a lot of people. But you know, it is one of those things that even though, like, you know, you or I are in the public eye and those bands are in an even greater public eye, that doesn't necessarily mean that those people wish that they are in the public eye. You know what I mean? It just, this is their job. And most of them probably didn't really think like, hell yeah, man, I'm going to write these songs and then we'll be this like Killswitch Engage Slipknot level band. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people get into the business wanting to do that, right? They want to be in a band for the most part because they want to have that rock star styled life. But there's a lot that comes along with it. You know, there's a lot that, a lot of pressures, a lot of other things that behind the scenes that definitely can go on that can change a person's mindset, mood, and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. It's weird to watch the dialogue play out, but I do think that we're moving towards people being more accepting of it as long as it's handled well. Because absolutely call it out if somebody is trying to be clickbaity about it. But clickbaity about it, in the instance of what happened today, would be saying, you know, we know what happened, click here for the details, yes. versus just putting it out there for the public to see. Yeah. So, you know, whatever. People are going to have their opinions. And I've definitely lost contact with some people that didn't agree with us doing High Notes. And now, you know, just this past month, as a quick example, side story here, a longtime listener of High Notes from day one, a very vocal supporter, texted me one day, or DM'd us, I should say, and told me, you know, I've been listening to the show since the beginning, which I already know. But lately, I've been listening to the first season again, and I've just decided, you know, I was listening to the Burt McCracken episode, one of the first episodes we ever did, and I have to go to rehab for heroin. And I'm telling you this to hold myself accountable.
Mm, interesting.
So later that day, their mom DMs us and is like, hey, I'm with blah, blah, blah. And we're at the center right now. They wanted you to know that they're checking in. And they like sent me a photo of the building or whatever. And then literally like 2 days ago, we heard from them again that they had successfully completed a short stay and now they're getting treatment. But I don't think that High Notes is the only reason that happened. But the fact that they could sit there and listen to somebody that they personally idolize talk about these things and learn from their experiences without having to go through it themselves entirely. I mean, this person in question is a parent who has children and, you know, hopefully now they're going to try to pull it together. And whether or not it works this time, that's fine. Sometimes you have to go, you have to restart 100 times.
Yeah.
But they're trying. And like, that's what happens when we have these conversations.
It's more, I'd rather somebody try for the 80th time than to not try at all. And then it end up being a big problem. Cause I'm sure you've lost friends to the drugs and alcohol and all that other stuff as anyone probably has. I mean, it feels like it's such a thing that happens all the time, unfortunately, but, you know, it is what it is, but yeah, it is good that these platforms are out there with these outlets that allow, you know, people to humanize their favorite bands. And, you know, that's kind of what I'd like to do on here, not in the aspect of like addiction and mental health and stuff like that. However, if it does come up on the podcast, we'll definitely explore those realms. Like, you know, I had Maddie on from, Memphis May Fire early on, and a good chunk of it was talking about, you know, mental health and him and getting his, you know, mental health right and stuff. So, you know, if you need help, again, don't be tough guy, tough girl, ask. You know, it's always cool to reach out. Cool. Not that I want to, you know, start out on a total bummer or anything like that with the first 10 minutes of being like almost depressing, but let's get back into Holics, James. So I didn't know anything about the front end of the company, and I still kind of don't. So I'd like you to explain a little bit more in detail. So like bands, you can sign up for a thing, right? And you have a dedicated, protected way of transferring files. So is that like, what other, I don't know, I'm just asking out of curiosity, because like, what are other benefits to that rather than like a band, say, just like has a Dropbox or like Google account where they're sharing their stuff back and forth?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. SoundCloud, Dropbox, Box, these are all competitors to some extent for us. But, you know, you can speak to this being a journalist yourself. You receive pitches on bands and albums all the time. And, you know, I don't know about you, but my eyes kind of glaze over when I see a Dropbox or a SoundCloud page, whatever. I know how it works, but like, it's not really grabbing me. So if I get an email,
you know,
So if I get an email for, you know, a band that I recognize immediately, like right now, there's an Atreyu album coming out soon while we're recording this. And I keep getting promo emails about this Atreyu record. And I like that band. So I'm like, okay, I'm curious. I'll check it out. But if I get an email for a band that I've never really heard of, but I'm just, you know, kind of interested in, it takes a little bit more to really get my interest. So if I end up going to, if I click your link and you take me to like Dropbox and you want me to download a file and open it and put it on, blah, 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 it's too much. It's too much. I'm not interested. What Holix offers is you sign up and you basically get access to a way to track everything that's happening. So the benefits to a person is you upload your music and you can create a promo landing page. Now, this page is entirely dedicated to your music. So you can customize it. You can have a banner. You have a description. You can add videos. You can add photos. Obviously, the music's there, download or no download. The background, the entire page, with the exception of one small logo in the top left corner, is entirely dedicated to your vision. So you can make a real impression with people. And it has a good success rate. You know, promos on our platform that are customized have a higher engagement rate than just the plain ones. And I think it's the same rule applies, right? Because if I go to SoundCloud to look at your page, this is the example I always use. If somebody sends me a link to their SoundCloud page, I land there and so much of what I see and what my brain thinks about is not the music. So there's the SoundCloud logo in the top corner. There's the big giant menu bar with all the buttons to push. There's the player at the bottom. There's an ad on the right side of the page. It's just, it's messy. There's a lot going on. And only about 10% of the page actually has to do with you and your music. And make it a more personal occasion. And even our bigger artists like this approach because, again, it allows them to kind of emphasize their brand or their aesthetic, whatever's happened, right? Because it's the difference between going to Dropbox and then clicking a link and then come what may of those files, or going to a page that is basically custom made specifically to celebrate this album, make you aware of it, and allow you to listen to it in high quality in a way that makes the client or the artist feel secure. Now, in addition to that security, using Holix has a lot of benefits that those other services don't provide. For example, analytics. So if I'm using SoundCloud and I, you know, make a private link and I send it out to 30 journalists, all I know is whether or not there are plays on those songs. Mm-hmm. I can see that song's been played so many times. On Holix, when you send out an invitation to your album to those same 30 contacts, each of those people will receive a unique URL link that is personal just to them. And we can tell you everything that they do with that link. So we know how many times they look at the email, how many times they've actually visited the page, what songs they listen to, whether or not they downloaded it. And we also give you all that information kind of cumulative. So if you're an artist that's promoting an album, you know, 4 months ahead of release, maybe you're still thinking about what songs are we going to use as promo singles? Well, with Holix Analytics, you can say, well, we sent it to all the top tier press. 100 of them listen to the record. And of those 100 people, the song that's being streamed the most is A, B, and C. And so then you kind of have this data set that allows you to make a more competent and hopefully successful campaign. Because you know, we find that business in the digital age and marketing, it's all about creating some kind of sales funnel. And all these other services, you know, you're basically
we're getting
just
nerdy
out there.
Here. We're getting real nerdy in our field here. Sales funnels
yeah,
and shit.
Getting real nerdy here.
Sorry to interrupt you. It's hilarious. We said that topic.
It's always about making you need data. You know, the whole world's revolving around that. Even regular consumers now, they have so much data and they love it. They want more of it. So our goal with Holix is not only the security aspect. I mean, that's nice and it gives you peace of mind, mm-hmm. but it's the data that we're able to provide you about the people engaging with your music that can help you not only make better decisions in terms of rollout, but also help you develop relationships. Because if I'm somebody like, let's say, Prosthetic Records, and I'm sending you all of our new albums and you're listening to records, that you at least have an interest in our product and what we do. And it kind of gives me a place to like lean when I have something new, right? So the next Pupil Slicer record comes along, I'm like, oh, well, obviously Van Flip would be a cool place to pitch them because that guy loves to listen to all of our records. Mm. So it just makes you better at business by, you know, getting into a more and more exact audience.
Right. Now you're making me feel bad because I don't like listen to every album that comes through the Holix list. So now you're making me feel like I got to go through.
That's all I'm saying.
Got to go through and hit the little like button. Also, I should probably tell everyone not to share those files that I've been sending out to everybody. I'm just kidding. I know they're already like they're tagged and all that other stuff. So
yeah, we do offer watermarking. We, you know, it's not something that we catch people doing that much anymore, especially because most of the big piracy sites have gone offline. But when I first started at the company 8 years ago, we were doing 50, 60 piracy takedowns every single month in terms of like identifying people who leak. And we still do. Like, you know, I probably did like a handful this year so far, but we do find people who are still out there leaking music.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know what I mean? Especially because like it's kind of like a privilege to get all these advanced copies, right? And like, what would you want to do? You want to like, I'm going to get these advanced copies and like put them on my blog and then I'd be like the cool guy. You know what I mean? It's just like, I never understood. I mean, like, again, I'm not going to sit here and say I haven't pirated music or still kind of pirate music. Although for like heavy music, I don't need to. I get the albums sent to me and stuff like that. So there's the benefit of that. But I would never attempt to get that taken away from me.
I've never understood it too for the same reason. Like if I know a website where I can download an album that I really want, let's say this is like 2008. There's a website where I've had a leaked album that I really wanted. Maybe I would be able to tell you the name of that website, but I definitely don't know the person who leaked it. Mm-hmm. So as the leaker, I never understand what the benefit to you is for doing this thing that can only hurt you if people found out that you did it.
Yeah,
because nobody's really out there like celebrating a leaker. It doesn't happen. Like people use what people leak, but we're
Fan
like,
bases may, right? Fan bases may, but then again, like you'd have to know the leaker, and like it's crazy.
Yes, and then it's like, well, if they know you, then it never makes sense to me. But people still do it, and you know, usually 9 times out of 10, the person A, they deny that they did it, but that's why watermarks exist to kind of prove you. And their other thing is, they always just say, you know, I'm a fan, and I wanted to share it with you. Which is weird kind of when you think about it from a business mindset, but most people don't. They just think like, oh my God, this new record is so good. I got to share it with Bob. And then Bob has 3 people he wants to share it with and so on. And so forth.
Reverse sales funnel, you know, it's just bigger at the top. So, but have you found that, because piracy is like an interesting topic too, because there's so much streaming going on and such like that. Like really the only kind of piracy that you have is leaks, you know, like people want the music, not just in the heavy realm, but in all over, you know, they want the music now. They want it, you know, right away, instant gratification. That's what we have going on with like social media and the internet right now. But do you see like a lot of piracy going on in general, like even outside of Holix and stuff like that, if in the business?
Not in music as much anymore. I mean, if there's a super early leak, and every now and then it certainly does happen, but it's increasingly rare. And I think part of it is because the industry is making shorter release schedules, right? Because if you're an artist whose album people would be so desperate for that they would leak it, that they would want to download a leak, you're at a level where you can probably just put that album out. So if a leak occurs, people will just rush it out. Like, they'll be like, oh, it's arriving early, like they did with the Eminem show a billion years ago. but in music itself, no. In film, it's still a gigantic problem. But that's because they just haven't figured out distribution the same way. I mean, in other areas, TV, film, video games, there's a lot of gatekeeping. There's a lot of like roadblocks to accessing content, right? Like you might have Netflix, but you don't have the exclusives on Amazon and on Hulu and HBO Max, blah, blah, blah. But in music, every service, including YouTube and just the general internet, has every song in recorded history, more or less. Yeah. There's small exceptions to the rule, like Garth Brooks for country fans. He only has a deal with Amazon Music. So if you're a fan outside of that, and his music is some of the most pirated music in the world to this day because of that lack of access. But music is so widely available, even on free plans, that most people are, it's way easier to just legally stream it at this point.
And I mean, at some, they are getting, you know, very few shekels for their streaming revenue, right? I mean, it was very weird. Pirating music for me as a kid was always very weird because I was definitely into it and I definitely did that. Like I said, I still kind of do sometimes. Don't come after me. But, you know, one of the things I attribute it to is like trading tapes or something like that back in the day, or trading CDs and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a good way to find music, and it's a good way to, like, I hate saying like test music out and stuff like that, but you can find new music, find new bands and all this, that, the other. But also, here we are full circle. I've come full circle, and I still stream music. I'll download an album if I can. Or if I want to, but I'm also buying CDs and buying vinyl at a rate that I had never done before. So it's like, I guess with the lack of all the physical media being out there, it's made me want the physical media more. Whereas CDs were getting pumped out by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And so it didn't really feel special, but you know, I always made it a point too, if I was pirating music, that I would support the band in any other way that I could, whether it's supporting them online, going to a show, spending gobs of money on merch, because being in a band myself, I
I kind of know that that's the band will see the bulk of that money, especially smaller bands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That are touring in a van and stuff like that. Those guys are definitely going to eat McDonald's off of my stuff or maybe get a better hotel room because they sold a little bit more merch, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always tell people, if you're not a person that likes physical media, buy merch, but if you're buying merch online, just add the digital download to your cart, even if you never use it. I remember when the last Fit for a King album came out, they did a live stream where they had like a whole exclusive line of merch. And I watched the live stream, which is free on Twitch. Good for them to be able to like give that to their fans. I bought two shirts. I bought one for my partner as well. And then when I was going to check out, I was like, oh, the digital download of The Path is only $5. Well, who cares? That's a cup of coffee. That's for most people, you will lose $5 or spend it frivolously in the next few days and not ever even think about doing it. So to add that to your cart and just like give the band those few bucks, like whatever. And as a digital download, that's like all profit. So it helps. So I was just add it to your cart, even if you don't use it. Just make the purchase.
That's good to know. I didn't really realize that it was pure profit for the band. I guess I should have realized it, right? But
yeah, you're just hosting it on your website and providing a download link. So whatever you're paying for hosting, but it's not a big file or anything.
Right. And again, those files are going to be better. They're going to sound better. Mm-hmm. It's going to sound high quality, and it's not going to sound like streaming. That's my biggest, mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing that I have with streaming. That's why I started buying CDs and stuff again, because I have a CD player in my car and, you know, I put a CD in my car. I listened to a CD like after a couple years of streaming and I was like, holy crap, this sounds totally, you know, totally different and better, fuller and bigger. And so from there on, I just started like really, I have like over 200 CDs now and that's only been a year and a half. So it's like crazy that I've gone this nuts with it, but with those downloads, you get those bigger files and, you know, you can put those on your phone and stream that rather than through Spotify. Cause Spotify and all that stuff is condensed and, you know, EQ'd specifically for tiny little speakers. So a lot of people don't realize that and they're missing out on a lot of music they can't necessarily hear through that editing.
Absolutely. I support it. I can't do physical media myself. I really fight hoarding. If I allow myself to do it, it's going to run wild.
Come to the dark side, James.
No, I can't. You know what I do? I do that for Godzilla stuff. I'm staring at two unopened Godzilla versus Kong toys right now. So I do allow it for Godzilla things, but just not music because it's gotten out of control.
We've all got our little things that we have.
We all got our things. That's mine. But yeah, I buy more music, please.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, and again, I think like, I honestly think as someone who's gone through the whole, like, you know, music and not, I haven't gone through the whole music industry, but I was around before CDs and CD burning and pirating CDs, you know, and then it's weird now that, you know, a lot of people are actually really worried early on to get caught. And there are people getting caught, obviously, but like, you know, how many people got caught? What's the percentage of people that got caught to the people that were doing it, you know? And I'm talking about music strictly because I feel like film and TV, they probably go after it a little more heavier. So, but, you know, I do think the younger generation is very much so into buying, whether it's merch or spending money on bands. They're way into it. And it's good to see because it obviously makes the scene flourish a little bit more and allows these bands to do what the fans love more often, because I talk to a slew of people every day on this podcast and a lot of them have day jobs, you know what I mean? And they have to work the day job because they're, you know, they don't get a lot of revenue from streaming and touring is, you know, not as prevalent right the second, but you know, here's what it is.
If I didn't do High Notes, I think I would do a podcast about artist day jobs, like have an artist on the show, but only talk about the day job. I would like that angle. I think that it's fascinating to figure out. I always like that. I like the idea of backup plans. So I guess maybe rather than talking about their day job and the extent of like, this is what I do and, while I'm trying to make music, it'd be more about the idea of like, everyone knows the ride eventually has to end, especially for the world of music where you and I exist. Mm-hmm. Like no one, the very rare 30-year career, right?
Oh, yeah,
most people are like 3 to 5 albums and I'm out. So I always want to know like, what is the thing that's like keeping you going outside of music? I remember recently learning that Adam from Taking Back Sunday just got his degree in architecture. So that's like his backup plan. So like Taking Back Sunday is done. Adam Lazara could build you a house. And I love that idea.
Yeah. I mean, can you think about it? There's so many like fans that would love to have their house built. Right? By, and then you go, exactly. Yeah, you already have a platform to like showcase all your architectural
giant
skills.
Audience. Yeah. See, it's a great podcast. Anyone watching this that wants to start a music podcast that would book guests, that's a great one to do it. Yeah, just steal it.
We do try to talk about that. You know, because again, it's we want to take that veil of like rock stardom, you know, and just like peel it back and be like, oh, these are just regular ass dudes that, I mean, they are regular dudes, right? Or regular people. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say just dudes, but regular people that just happen to make music that I enjoy or that you enjoy, you know? And they definitely can't do that full time all the time unless you're at a certain level. But even then, you know, that's a, I don't even know the percentage, but it's probably like the 1% of the bands out there can actually just like write music and that's it. But even then they do other things that are hobbies of theirs, you know? And that's also interesting too, because it gets you into the mindset of that person.
See, there you go. There it is. Someone steal that idea.
Please. Yeah. Well, don't do it I might do it a little more on my podcast. So you never know.
All right. You can steal it as well. That's fine. Don't even give me credit. It's fine. Just take it.
I just want
to see cool stuff exist. So yeah. That's
cool content. So speaking of like, you've been around for a while in the, you know, the heavy music genres and scene and stuff like that. What are some of the biggest changes, whether it's, you know, in the music industry itself or in the way like bands work together or bands work with their team to kind of release, you know, their product?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest change is like, I mean, obviously just the digital age, but more, I would say it's like the social media awakening and just engagement awakening. Cause I feel like up until very recently, the last like 3 or 4 years, rock and heavier, the heavier music more and more were always considered like behind. And maybe in the public conscious, it's still behind the curve. You know, obviously hip hop is much more popular in a general sense, but rock in terms of doing the things you need to do to position yourself to be a gigantic star, rock was like slowly falling behind because there are all these like cool bands. There's always been great bands making great music. But until very recently, it seemed like most of them didn't know how or didn't care about being proficient at any kind of forward-facing fan engagement. It was always like, we make really good records and then we tour 200 days out of the year and that's what we do. Why do I have to be on social media? Why do I have to have a TikTok account? Why do I have to do anything that isn't make music, go on tour? And I always appreciated that from like a very pure art perspective. Like, well, I'm not doing this to be famous or anything. But in recent years, there are bands that I think you could argue are nowhere near the best band the genre has to offer, but they have recognized the power of leveraging fan interest and developing a digital community to further a career out here in the real world. And watching that finally happen in the world of metal and watching the older dogs in the game try to like run to catch up, realizing, oh, well, there's potential here that maybe I should have understood because it's been there this entire time. Yeah. I think that's the biggest change, and it's exciting to see. It's cool to see, like, when we're recording this about a week ago, I watched Knocked Loose do a live stream concert.
Right.
And $15, but like, if you told me back in 2002 or even in the late 90s, like, you could log on to your computer and watch this band not only perform live, but it will sound better than they've ever sounded in any venue you've ever been to. It'll have a higher production value and there'll be a giant light wall and you could watch it while chatting with everyone else that loves the band as much as you do. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that was like living in Blade Runner. It was such a cool concept. Yeah. And watching it last week, I was like, this is crazy. Because I mean, even in the Code Orange one last year, obviously, was such a big moment for them. That's a great example of what I'm talking about. It's like, all of a sudden, a metal band was talked about in like the New York Times and everywhere else because they realized that they could do what all these people in hip hop and pop music had already been doing for over a decade. And even indie music, you know, grew world of indie music that wouldn't have gotten anywhere pre-social media, learned how to leverage that to become super popular. And rock is finally starting to catch up and metal is starting to catch up. And thanks to TikTok introducing more and more kids to alternative style, fashion, music, whatever it happens to be, there's slowly becoming a renaissance in more of this deep cut metalcore and hardcore from the early 2000s through now. Mm-hmm. And these bands are actually taking advantage of that. I find that to be fascinating. And also like, finally, we're finally living in the 21st century as an arena of music.
Right. And I do love the way that the scene, because I mean, I came from I came from the scene in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was a drastically different place to be. And I'm not saying it wasn't good. It was definitely like I learned a lot from, you know, I learned a lot of positives from that time frame. So, but there were also like there was like I felt like a lot of gatekeeping type stuff going on, obviously. And again, the quote unquote tough guy exterior.
Yeah.
But it's really cool to see all these things happen, and it's really cool to see bands like, you know, there's slew of bands that get into their merch. It's more like a street style streetwear brand styled merch rather than just like your typical, like, not trying to clown on Parkway Drive shirt here, but it's like just their album. You know what I mean? It's just like just the album.
I hate that.
Or the band name. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, I know a lot of people probably get tired of seeing all these long sleeves with like, graphics all up and down the arm. But I feel like that's cool. All that shit looks cool. And it makes me want to buy that merch that much more because, you know, now you can have a, with Depop and all these other kind of outlets, there's a market for like not only throwback, you know, original shirts, but like reprints and prints of just like I said, streetwear branded styled merch. And like, it's another cool aspect of like being in this realm, you know? And
yeah. Well, it was always like, Having a cool shirt, especially in metal and hardcore, is always such a fun thing. And then for a while, it did get pretty kind of stagnant design-wise. But I think you said it best. It's like streetwear. I think, you know, Fit for a King is a band that handles it really well, where their merch company is almost as big as the band itself when you think of, like, how much they're promoting these two things. And they keep it fresh with limited drops and everything like that. We Came as Romans has also done a really good job of capitalizing on that. And then they've also done these collaborations, which I think are so cool, where they partner with a band, both record one another's songs and like vocalist switch, and then they put out a line of merch where it kind of combines the aesthetics of those two bands together. Brilliant idea. Can't believe it took this long for it to happen.
Right? Yeah. No, it is crazy to see how it's evolving and everything like that. And you know, like I am a part of all these like different kind of merch groups on Facebook, which I feel sad admitting, but I'm in a Glassjaw one because Glassjaw is my obvious, I mean, obvious to anyone who's ever listened to this podcast is my favorite band of all time. There was a guy in there that was so pissed the other day about it being very limited. Like, I can't stand that all these drops are limited and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, first off, it's smart that bands have started to do that because beforehand they would be like, okay, I need X amount of shirts, then I need X amount of shirts and this, 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 and this, right? And then there's a chance that the band or bands would pay that money, get that merch, and those designs maybe don't sell as well, right? And then now you're stuck with all this merch that you probably are going to take a loss on. Whereas now you see a lot more pre-order type stuff. You see a lot more limited drops. So like, you know, Merch Limited is a whole website based on just that, right? And they take big bands and they do like, we're doing 50 hoodies, dudes. Grab them if you want them, you know? And it's cool because again, although that does drive up a market for resale type stuff, which is running plentiful in all sorts of genres and everything like that. But it's part of the game and it makes it like trading and collecting cards. You know, there's an allure to chasing down a specific item or album or vinyl that you'd want. And there's a feeling of when you get that for, you know, hopefully the price you were looking for. Uh-oh, I think he's frozed up. Hey, we're back.
Hi. Okay. Sorry. I don't know what happened.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good. I just kept it rolling. We're just going to keep it rolling. Let me make sure it's recording video. Yeah. Okay. We're just going to cut it in.
Okay. Good. All right.
3, 2, 1. Boom. Back.
All right. One other thing I'll add real quick about the coolest thing to see that you got me thinking about just now when you were talking is I guess the rise of things like Patreon. I mean, just last week, I think I saw an article about the band While She Sleeps, not a band that I necessarily love, but they've been able to get 2,000 people to send them money every month on Patreon. That's allowed them to be basically full-time musicians, even though they are nowhere near, you know, the top band in the genre by any means. And Fit for King does this as well. In the alternative scene, Circus Survive has done this incredibly well over the last year. But this ability, again, for artists who realize the power of harnessing your digital audience to further your pursuits, Patreon and systems like that show that this is a great method. I mean, I pay $10 a month for the Circus Survive Patreon. I don't think about those $10, and it helps those guys keep making music. They can. I'll do that every single month.
Oh yeah, totally. And I, you know, what's weird is I used to watch this YouTube channel back in the day, and it was a girl and a guy called Pomplemousse. And Jack, the guy who created Patreon, is the guy that was in that band. So it's made by artists, you know, for artists, so to speak, or creators, so to speak. So now I do think that is going to get more prevalent as time goes on. But I think what bands will probably and hopefully do, and I'm not trying to shit on Patreon in any way, but I feel like they will do more of like what kind of Frankie from Inmure was trying to do, like a fan club where you would go to like the website, maybe like the band's website. So that way the band would get the bulk of that money rather than split it with another service or something like that. But I think with the pandemic happening and all those other all the bands and artists and stuff like that having to pivot and figure out like how they're going to survive or how they're going to, you know, connect with their fan base and such like that, I think it's great for everything going forward. And I can't wait to see what happens because I've been a big fan of like, you know, I don't want to say fan clubs, but like that would be something I've told every band that I've ever come in contact with, especially over this, even before the pandemic, I was like, you guys need to monetize your content. I mean, like you said, rock and the rock genre is so far behind the scene. Like, I think it wasn't looked at as a cool thing to do, right? Like no one's going to like be mm-hmm. in this. I guess Slipknot would be a different, obviously people would be like the Slipknot fan base, but like a smaller band, like no one's going to be like, yeah, I'm in the so-and-so fan club. You know what I mean? But those bands do have to produce the content to make it, you know, worth the fan base to do yeah. that. So, and that makes it cool. Cause again, it's more of a connection. You're in like the little back end, you know, you're watching videos that not the everybody gets to watch, or you get to do Q&As with the band, or maybe there's other kind of like perks that they send out to their fan base, you yeah. know? But again, like you said,
yeah.
it allows them to do nothing more than create the art that their fan base wants.
Yeah, and if you're an artist that's watching this and you don't think you have enough like content to fuel Patreon, then like start building a Twitch community, because some of the artists that do Patreon really well are also on Twitch. And Ryan Kirby of Piffer King, great example. Trevor from Black Dahlia Murder, those are guys who are making a good portion of their income now through Twitch streaming. Matt from Trivium does like really well on Twitch, surprisingly. He and I did yoga on Twitch once, so you can go back in history and watch that.
That's cool. I've been trying to get into yoga.
Man, I love that you mentioned, it's really fun. I love that you mentioned Frankie from Inmure, because I feel like it's the 10-year anniversary of Speaker of the Dead this year, and not enough people are celebrating that band anymore.
Well, it's one of those things where I think Frankie just is misunderstood a lot too, and that could be because the exterior that the exterior personality that he created for, you know, mm-hmm. and again, that was created in a time that the scene and everything was different. So I think he gets a lot of flack, and I don't want to sit here and say I'm like standing up for Frankie, but I also spent time with him differently than most casual fans would, or most people that hate on that band. You know what I mean? And
Same thing.
They've been successful.
Spent time with the guy, and I feel like,
yeah, they've been successful a long time, or the band has been successful for a long time, and they've gone through the ringer. You know, every year it seems like they got an issue that they're going through, and they definitely. I know Frankie caught some shit for doing the fan club, and you know, you got to set it up right, and you got to do it right, and I don't know if. I mean, I'm sure if he tried now, a couple years later, with like a bunch of like roads mm-hmm. already paved, he could definitely do it right. And yeah, Speaker of the Dead was a great album.
Yeah, it's so good. Anyways, what else? What else is on your mind? Hit me with something else.
Oh man, I mean, I don't know. I was watching baseball right before you. started this, so I didn't want to like bring baseball up because we've been talking baseball on the podcast for a couple episodes. We had JB on, JB yeah. from August Burns Red. He's a baseball fan, and we just released mm-hmm. Hatebreed, Frank from Hatebreed and Ringworm and Integrity. He's a big Tampa Bay Rays fan, and I'm a Rays fan, so I don't necessarily want to get into that again. But so like, what are some other cool things about Holics No. Let's get into marketing for younger bands. Let's get nerdy again.
Perfect.
So like okay. you kind of established a little bit that rock has been behind the curve on marketing and such like that and dealing with their fan base. And I think that's, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think again, it was like cool rock star lifestyle and we're not going to be doing that kind of stuff. But what are some tips for like bands that are, you know, lower tier level or artists who are lower tier level, like what would be some tips that you have found that work for any sized artist?
Well, you know, my basic rule of thumb for artists, especially in the digital space, is, you know, don't focus on being everywhere all the time. Meaning, you don't need to be on Facebook content, IG content, Twitter content, blah, 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 blah. If there's a platform that you enjoy, absolutely stick with it. And then my second, if you need to have a second platform, and maybe you don't, but figure out where your audience is the strongest. So if you're an artist that maybe has a little bit more of a legacy tail to you, then Facebook might actually be a pretty viable space because they might already get fan club there for you. You know, Facebook tends to have a slightly older user base, but if you're trying to target teenagers, well, we all know that teenagers aren't necessarily on Facebook. So why are you wasting your time there? Instead, figure out where that community is thriving. Maybe it's Twitter, maybe it's TikTok, maybe it's Instagram, maybe it's two of those things, whatever it happens to be that you feel comfortable managing. If you can figure out where your audience exists and just feed content to that main source, they will spread the word. They will repost and share that stuff wherever else they exist online. And then you can let those other services take a back seat. I'm not saying don't have a Twitter presence or a Facebook presence, but when it comes to creating original content and engaging with your audience on a daily basis or as well as you feel comfortable doing, find that main pool of fans and build out from there rather than trying to like spin all these different blades. It's pointless. It's going to waste your time. You're going to go crazy. Just focus on the one that you like and the one where your fans are, and the rest will kind of take care of itself over time.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree about Facebook. I think, unfortunately, I mean, I'm on it all the time because for work and stuff like that, but if I could get off of it, I would never go on it again. But you're right. It is an older demographic and it feels like Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. And even, I don't necessarily know of anybody like finding bands on Twitter or anything like that, but it does happen because people do reshare stuff. And I'm sure you know, because the metalcore community is pretty tight on Twitter as well. Yeah. So it is a viable option. But you do have to try all those platforms too to figure out which one is the one for your band or group. Sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely. You know, play with it a bit. Like I said, if you have a fan club on Facebook, and sometimes your fans will have already started one, focus on that fan club more than you necessarily focus on running a page and trying to get likes. Mm-hmm. There's a band on Fearless Records called Chase Atlantic. They have a major Facebook fan group, and the band isn't involved in it at all. I think it's called like Chase Atlantic Worldwide or something like that. But as a journalist, you know, if I write about Chase Atlantic, it goes off onto Twitter through whatever platform. And, you know, maybe someone clicks on it. Maybe the band reshares it. I don't know if that stuff really does that much for me. But if I take that same piece of content and share it in that community where there's all these Chase Atlantic bands gathering, talking every single day without the band even needing to participate, that content gets a ton of clicks. It gets a lot of shares. It gets reposted on a bunch of stuff. And that's because that community that already existed before I got there or is kind of self-perpetuating its existence doesn't need the band's participation. They're so fervently dedicated to this artist that they love that they're going to engage with things. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why if you don't have that already, just find where it's kind of existing. Find where people are using your name as a hashtag, where they're tagging you the most, and you know, give them stuff that they'll want to share, and they will share it. But there's a beauty in those Facebook communities, and there's Reddit too. You know, some artists probably have really big Reddits and they don't even know about it because they don't ever think to check.
You're right.
But those communities, again, are creating really cool content. And if you are somebody trying to promote or talk about that band and you put your content in those communities, you will know right away whether or not it's good and it will get shares if it's quality. And the same thing goes for the artist. I mean, I know a band that recently did a major tour announcement and they posted the pre-sale code in their official Facebook group before they even sent it out to the mailing list because that place is so like wildly dedicated. So, you know, find what works for you and use it rather than trying to do everything all at once.
Right. And I feel like that is something that bands do have to take into consideration that they didn't have to prior. You know what I mean? Like it is a little more work. It's not just about like how good your songs are anymore, because my next kind of topic or question I was going to ask you is like, where do you see the future of like music being released and such like that? Like, bands necessarily don't need to rely on labels anymore. You know, they can self-produce, self-promote, self-release. So like, what do you see like as a trend in the industry? Like, what do you see it going? Where do you see it going?
That's a really good question. It's tough. I think as far as labels go, you definitely don't need one. I work with an artist right now who paid for their album themselves. And the only reason that we partnered with a label at all is because they met our demands. So basically we had a meeting where we sat down as a team and we're like, okay, so the album, we could put it out ourselves on digital platforms and probably do like CDs or cassettes or something. Vinyl would be a stretch, but we could do it all ourselves and we could just use the mailing list. Or if somebody wants to give us, we had a figure, I'm not going to say what the figure was in case anybody knows what band I'm talking about. But we had basically a budget for music videos and we wanted somebody that would pay for the vinyl release. So the cost of a couple music videos, the vinyl release, and a publicist of our choosing. So we went to find a publicist. We were like, this is how much it's going to cost. So some people reached out with an interest in it. And we took meetings with several labels. And in each one, we said those exact things. We said, so we've already spent this much money on the album, thousands of dollars. And we want you to be involved in this, but only if you're willing to meet us at the exact same level of investment. So we came to them with a very specific list of demands. And one of them stepped up and said, you got it. Here's exactly how much money you asked for. We're going to do the vinyl. We're going to take care of it all. Worked out for us. But again, the band could have done it without that. If you can find a team of people, label or otherwise, that share your vision and are willing to meet you halfway, if not go an extra mile to help make your dreams a reality, then team up with them. But until you find people that love your music and care about it as much as you do, if you can afford to stay independent for as long as possible. And, you know, play with releases. I like what Of Mice and Men is doing right now, where they're putting out they're about to put out their second EP of the year. Now, they've done full-length albums up to this point. Now they have a full-length album worth of material, and they're just giving us quarterly 3-song EPs. By the end of the year, we'll have a new album, but it's cool to see them. They have new music to share every, 3 weeks right now. It's really incredible to watch unfold.
That's one of the things.
And it keeps us talking about it.
Right. And again, that's one of the things that I've kind of harped on, I think, the entire time I've been on this podcast, is rock is behind the times, obviously. And they set on this schedule of okay, releasing albums. Right. But like you said, there's a lull where it could be a year, 2, 3, depending on the band. Right. They could be a big lull in their release schedule. Whereas that band isn't probably getting talked about as much because they aren't necessarily touring all the time, or they're not releasing press releases or doing anything cool within that time period. But I always thought, because in the DJ and the pop world and all these other avenues, hip hop and such like that, they release singles all the time. And now bands have the ability to do that. I mean, bands self-record a lot, but bands team up with people that are all on the same goal and they have the same, their team or whatever. They can release songs, 12 songs throughout the year, right? And then at the end, maybe press the CD or whatever, and then they can buy, fans who are rabid about it can buy it. But at least you have something every month coming up that's a new song. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a new song. It could be 1 month of music video, 1 month a merch drop or whatever. But as long as you're consistently putting out content, no matter what the content is, I think that's beneficial for them. And I think that's how the future of the industry is going to go. So I think we'll probably see less and less label type stuff and more just more PR and more, whatever. But now, if you're in a band of 4 to 5, 6 people, if you can get a band of 4 to 5, 6 people that can each wear a separate hat and do something different, that's less money you got to split, and you don't have to go out and find that person. You know what I mean? But you have to make sure that your skills can be, used properly, or that you have the proper skills that they need,
Yeah. Well, I mean, and right. So there's a couple of different ways of thinking about your band. There's the artistic approach that's we're a couple of guys or a group of people who all, love this music and we work really hard at it. And then there's a more methodical approach where you're trying to build a band, but also keeping in mind the skill set of each individual person. And if you can find that same level of cohesion as though we're just doing it for fun, then that's that's your ideal situation. I know you and I, because you interacted with me on Twitter about it, we like this artist, Tobey Norwegwe. He has one producer, Nell, a woman. He has his wife, who's pretty much his only main collaborator, and then himself, and one video guy, one photographer, one stylist. And they've created this entire world of music videos, albums, songs that all have a very similar aesthetic. They all are presented in a similar way. And it's always top shelf production, top shelf video quality.
And on top of the fact that the man has released a song every Sunday for like, what, 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
he's
insane.
Insane. Yeah, it's insane. And again, I think that's where like it started to click for me when I found out that, you know, his team is basically just like his close-knit
six people
group.
Or so.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, that's you just get, and he said something on an interview one time, actually. He's like, they just have to wear different hats. Like they can do different things. You know what I mean? And that's mm-hmm. the kind of people that you want to surround yourself with. Like, and again, that's a different genre altogether, but if you can have that within your band, dude, you're light years ahead of a lot of other people, you know?
Yeah, the same exact rules apply. And a band like Code Orange, while they do have a label and they have a slightly larger team now, what got them there is that they kind of have that same level of skill where it is more people because it's a band, but they each have a role and they have roles on top of those roles and they all do them to the absolute best of their abilities. And it creates a very cool, not just sound and band, but like community and world around that music that kind of is bigger than the music itself.
For sure.
And Toby does that same thing. And if you can find a way to do that as an artist, I think that that's the key to sustainable success these days. Is you want people to feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves. And the bands that seem to be really rising through or at least maintaining their momentum right now are the ones who kind of have that going for them, where there's a whole world to explore. There's like an ideology. Sometimes there's like a narrative in the music, or maybe it's just a visual aesthetic where it's like you always know it's going to be more of what you love.
Yeah. You got to approach the band as a brand and you got to brand the hell out of it. Even when I was in bands, I never understood people that just focused on the music because it's so much more than that. I mean, I get the artistic outlook and the artistic, you know, feel of it, but like I was forever on the internet in a band, just like going at it. Just like, listen to my band. Who can we play with shows out of town? Like, you know, I was networking on MySpace like endlessly, dude. Like that's where my name Lurk came from. Like I was just going through everyone's profile, lurking everybody out, just wanting to know any and everybody. What band are you in? What, you know, and blah, 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 blah. MySpace, and I don't want to talk about it too long, but like MySpace was fucking great, you know, for the scene back then and finding new bands and everything like that. It was great. Networking, it was like there's got to be something that makes all that easier for our artists. You know what I mean? And I think the notion of like needing a record label is long gone. And I think, like you said, the bands that can cohesively work together and each wear different, you know, hats or whatnot, you're light years ahead and your stay in the scene is probably going to be longer than just, you know, waiting around and because you're going after it. You know what I mean? Like if you're going after it, the drive is there. The fan base will see that. Like you said, you'll create a community around it and they'll be interacting with you almost on the daily, you know, and it just keeps you fresh in the viewer or listener's mind.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing to see what's going to happen. You know what I mean? And as a almost 40-year-old man, it's just crazy to see how things have changed just in the last 20 years, especially for hardcore and metal.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are both super pumped about Furnace Fest.
Of course.
And just the other day, I was thinking about, like, I remember when I was a teenager and how much work I had to do, in theory at least, to discover a band like Zao. And like everyone that I knew Zao at the end of the 90s was like, they're the greatest thing to ever happen in hardcore at the time. And everyone had the tattoo and it was like a cult. But finding that cult and like becoming a part of it and then finding other people that were, you know, in that community outside of a show was virtually impossible. Mm-hmm. And these days, like, I'm like, can you imagine if we had the capabilities they had now back when bands like that were coming up, it would be a completely different world. I'm very envious of how easy it is to kind of become part of one of these communities online and then, you know, feel like you're a part of something bigger than yourself. It used to be so difficult. And I try to never lose sight of how special those things are.
Yeah, it is very special. Especially that time was very special. Not that it's not special now for people who are finding music and everything like that, but it definitely was like you felt like, yeah, because you couldn't go to even Hot Topic and find bands that you were into online at Hot Topic. And eventually, you know, the popularity of the scene became so big to where they were having shirts and all these other merchandise things going on. But yeah, man, I mean, even today, if I bump into a Glassjaw fan or someone, if I'm wearing a shirt and someone says something, it blows my mind because I know that band is so fucking small in this grand scope of things that it's like, dude, Yeah. But now we can all find each other on like the Facebook group, you know?
Yeah. Now you just Google Glassjaw and there's a billion links.
Yeah. I'd have to go to like glassjaw.net and like hang out in the forum and nerd out, you know, but it's good that we can do it via public. So, oh, there was one more thing I was wanting to bring up, but now I'm fucking blanking out.
Oh, wait, I'll ask you something while you're trying to remember. Do you think we'll ever get to hear the unreleased Head Automatica album?
I don't know, man.
And it's Glassjaw adjacent.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think Daryl will ever be like, here you go? Just
do there are things that Daryl's done outside of Head Automatica and Glassjaw that I wish would be recorded too? Like, I'm going to throw it way on back, but he had this little group called Geometry back in the day. And, dude, they made some fucking awesome songs. And there's only like live recordings of them. And so like, no, I don't think we'll ever hear. I don't think we'll ever hear. Glassjaw will wait 10 years to release a damn album. You know what I mean? So they're like the scenes version of Tool. So I
remember that there's a while in the 2010s when Daryl was like, there is a third Head Automatica album. It's done. I don't know when it's coming out. And then it just like, then we just stopped talking about it. And every now and then I find myself being like, I wonder what that sounds like. I bet it's great.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, and it's interesting to see where it would go because obviously the first, Decadence was a different album than the second one. But it would be cool to see how they matured on the third time around, you know? And God, they're just, he's a great vocalist.
As a Palumbo, as a Palumbo fan, I figured you would at least have an opinion on it. I want to hear it. Daryl, if you're watching, please. Let us hear the third Head Automatica.
Oh, Daryl, if you're watching.
And do a tour.
Yeah. yes. Just tour. If you could just tour with all your bands, that'd be great all the time. I would love that. If you want to get on the show, by all means, you are it's him, Chino, Fred Durst / Wes Borland. Those are the three that I want to get on before I hit 100 episodes. We have like 40 more to go. So the clock is ticking.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right.
We've got a God list, you know. There's people on the list. Those three are very up there because obviously Daryl's a big person in my life, and so is Fred. Unfortunately, fuck that gatekeeping crap. Limp Bizkit was dope. Okay, and I'm from Jacksonville, so of course that is what it is. But James, man, it was great chatting with you. We definitely, you know, may want to bring you back and just continuously, you know, figure out what's going on in the behind the scenes marketing world and you know, inside industry looks. I think these are great for people who are just casual fans of music too, because they understand like the inner workings of like how bands plan and work and how the industry works, you know?
I think I would love to be back on the show, thank you. But I think it'd be fun if we did a Furnace Fest preview. We can just swap stories about all these 20-year-old bands
that are
playing again for the first time in a decade.
Yeah, we could have I definitely think there should be a whole episode dedicated to Furnace Fest. And because first off, if you're listening to this and you don't have a ticket and you're not going and you're a fan of any of those bands, I don't think you realize how monumental this festival is. And I can only blow it up so much because I feel like it's one of those things that I'll look back in history and be like, damn, dude, like that was so awesome. Because again, it was awesome 20 years ago. I didn't go to the festival then, but the Furnace Fest DVDs were like iconic, you know, like Andrew WK probably wouldn't be as big if he didn't have his, his Furnace Fest set. And if you're not knowing what I'm talking about, YouTube that. And it is insane, you know, and there's many shows during those festivals that are just like that. And it's going to be great to have all that back together again. And I'm looking very forward to it, even though I am missing Limp Bizkit that weekend at Rebel Rock, but it'll, you know, sacrifices have to be made, James.
All right. Oh, thank you so much for having me around, man. This has been fun. You're really good at Twitter. I enjoy watching you. I enjoy watching you exist on the internet.
Well, thank you.
This has been fun to put a face to an avatar, and we will hang out definitely at Furnace Fest. But yeah, preview piece for sure. I have a billion stories about most of these bands that no one understands why I would pay so much money to go see. And this has been cool. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. And I have to say thank you for being the first person to call me a journalist, because I definitely don't look at myself like that. And that was a welcome compliment, James. I appreciate that.
No problem. It's important to tell people that they're doing the thing that you think they want to be doing, because you're doing it, man. This is it. You're asking thought-provoking questions and learning, hopefully, facts. I mean, I told you it's true. I can't speak for the other guests.
Yeah, right.
But you know, you're getting the people answers. I mean, I think that counts. You're doing the work. Congratulations.
Even if I can't remember everything that we talked about in an episode, and there's many episodes that I forget everything after we record it, it is cool to go back and listen to it and be like, we did talk about that.
Yeah.
On the
podcast. Yeah. Exactly. Listen, I'm 232 episodes into Inside Music. I can't even tell you the guests from below 100, probably. Every now and then, somebody will comment on something, and I'll be like, "Oh yeah, I remember when we talked about that."
Yeah. I'm getting to the point where like people like will be like, "Hey, you remember that time when you were talking to so and so?" And I'll be like, "No, I don't. I don't remember it." It's, you know what I mean? I've done so many, and I haven't even done so many of these. It's just because because I'm such a fan of a lot of these bands and stuff like that, that it's very hard to concentrate a lot of the time. So it's so nerve wracking, you know what I mean? But it's a labor of love. What can you say?
Oh, can I do a plug real quick?
Go ahead. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cut me off.
Mm-hmm. No.
when you're listening to this, most likely, depending on any production issues, the fourth season of High Notes will be out. It'll be episodes 22 through 30, I believe. This season, because I know it's not coming out, I can spoil it. This season includes Phil from All That Remains, which I already have. Both Butcher Babies on this season. We have Ryan from the band Monarch. If you're a TikTok person, we have PP Cocaine and Jack Hayes, as well as Dennis DeYoung, the founding member of Styx, sharing some wild stories from the 70s. And some other guests that we have not yet recorded, so I'm not going to say them out loud yet. But the season is coming out soon. There's a ton of episodes out. Everyone from Head of Korn through Shannon Larkin of Godsmack, a lot of alternative musicians, Anthony Green, Burt McCracken, so on and so forth, have all done the show. It's their story of addiction and recovery. I just host it. I'm a narrator in between story elements, but it's really cool. People seem to like it, and I would love it if you checked it out.
Yeah, I didn't even know about that, but James, I will check it out for sure, because that sounds interesting. Both sound interesting. So I'm just going to cut it here, but stick around if you don't mind. I want to kind of pick your brain about some other things. But again, thanks for coming on the show, brother. And we'll definitely keep in touch before Furnace Fest. And I'm sure you're going, right? You're definitely going?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We'll see each other there and everything like that. Yeah, so it's going to be a grand old time.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.